Gee, I wonder who that could be calling. Hello.
Insurgent Radio Network calling.
Who is this calling?
Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network calling.
Who am I speaking to? And where are you calling from?
And this is Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana.
Where exactly is that located at?
Right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse.
What goes on at that Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern?
Well, we have parties, and we do a lot of dancing, and do a lot of singing and dancing and band playing.
Is there anything else around there?
We got the weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard right out back.
How is the weather in North Central Indiana?
Well, the weather continues to be cold. Well, I can't use that weather report because it's from a different time of the year. Yeah, it's been raining off and on all night, but it's up into the 40s and probably get up into the 50s today. So anyhow, we'll go on with the introduction. But I'm all snug as a bug in a rug in my little bunker here.
I heard that there are dues to pay to listen to the Insurgent Radio Network. Where would I send them?
Send your dues money to P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana 46581, or general correspondence to Tommy if you want to write me a letter or something.
Where would I send donations?
Send your donations, your free will donations of thousands of dollars, of course, to that same box.
What if I want to order books or DVDs?
When you want to order books or DVDs or anything tangible like that, you order that from, you know, our resist.com website, but the address for ordering is Insurgent, P.O. Box 23022. I'm going to have to change that, too. Yeah, it's P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana 46581. INITAS, California 92023, and include your payment for whatever you're ordering. And that's way you'll get much faster service than through poor old broken down old Terrible Tommy.
Thank you very much. I will be listening from now on to the Insurgent Radio Network. Have a nice day, Terrible Tommy, and thank you for the call.
Yeah, we're going to have to edit that intro. I'm going to have sub-zero weather here in July, the way it's going. How about that? Speaking of donations, the way we've been wanting to work this is to issue you a passcode that everybody, once they've paid their or given their donation for the month, will receive a passcode. And that's going to simplify things a lot, because sometimes I get a little mixed up here, and then we have to find out who's paid and who's not paid. I try to keep a very good record of it, but if there's ever any question, contact merchandiseresist@yahoo.com to check on it. But I believe the way the webmaster has it set up to where we should receive our donation by the 15th of the month, I believe it was. And when we receive the donation, then you'll receive a passcode for the radio show. If there's any changes to that, well, we'll let you know. But I think that there's a few people, just a very few people, that have not gotten up to their donations for, like, last month. And so we're going to have to set it up so that you'll be temporarily cut off from the radio show, and unless you have some, you know, reason, a real good reason for not sending in a donation. Now, once in a while, we have someone who's sick or way down on their luck, and we let it ride for a couple of months. But we do need the donations, because we do pay the phone bills, electric bills, and also send some money to the the inmates and the prisoners too. So we want to keep that up. We don't need a fortune. We're not on there like Hal Turner used to do. Every day, everything's broken down. I got to have all new equipment, all that kind of stuff. We're pretty good at making do. In fact, my equipment is pretty good shape right now with the new computer that my kids have given me for my birthday. And I think otherwise we're pretty good shape on equipment here. So for the time being, if you get a note asking you if your donations are paid up, just let me know. If you have and I've messed up, let me know. If not, get them paid up. But we're going to set this thing up with the password, so if you don't get your donations in by a reasonable time, you'll just not get the password, and that'll simplify it for everybody. If you've got a problem that you need to talk about, well, just let me know, and we'll see what we can do. Got one good buddy down there in Texas that's taking care of a invalid wife, and he's doesn't have a lot of money to live on. So we, in those cases, we let it slide, you know. Well, with this Fort Hood situation, I haven't heard anyone touch on the possibility of depleted uranium poisoning. This upsets me because I see all the headlines as this is just a disturbed, emotionally disturbed kid. He's a white kid. And maybe he is. Of course, the question is, why is he? The military hands out drugs like candy. But also the fact that even if he hasn't been in combat overseas, they're using this depleted uranium ammunition at all the training bases that I know of around the country. So you don't have to be in combat to pick up depleted uranium poisoning. You can get it right here at your big training camps like Camp Pendleton, California, 29 Palms, places like that. Maybe down here in Indiana at Camp Atterbury, because they've made millions of rounds of depleted uranium ammunition, and you know the military, they're going to want to use it up, even if they think there's a danger to the stuff. Just like Agent Orange, it didn't take long that they knew something was wrong, but yet they still kept using it and denying it was a big problem. And that's the way the government operates, always in denial. You know, you'd think they're all carrying Egyptian passports. Well, I see a student over at Kent State. Remember Kent State over in Ohio? It's not that far from Cleveland. Remember when the white National Guard shot down white students that were demonstrating against the war back in the early 70s, I believe. I believe that was on Nixon's watch. And, well, they had a little fracas over there because a Negro man, a student, I guess, who's studying criminology. Yeah, he's studying criminology. He somehow shot himself in the hand, or somebody else shot him in the hand, and then he ran to his buddy, tried to get his buddy to hide the gun for him. And his buddy did, but then his buddy spilled the beans, and in a way I don't blame him, because if he's your friend, you wouldn't go over and have him hide the gun. You'd get rid of the gun. But I guess this guy was too greedy and selfish to get rid of my favorite gun, man, my favorite piece. So that happened yesterday, and so they locked down the whole university. Now, you're talking about thousands of people in this big university, Kent State University. Can you imagine how much that costs the state? It costs a fortune just for the janitorial work and so forth. But what's money? What's money when you're having fun? I believe I told you the other day, Marty Cox, one of our good buddies from the West Coast, is back home again. I guess he's doing pretty good, considering that he's got only 20% activity in his heart. but I guess they're going to surgically put in a defibrillator into his chest. And I've talked to quite a few people that have had that done. I was talking to an old classmate lady friend of mine at our monthly meeting of our senior class, and she's had it done. She told me that one time she had trouble with it, and somebody said, put a magnet on it. So she put a magnet on it and started working fine. So I don't know how many people out there might have one of those in your chest, but if something happens in an emergency, I guess you'd be best to carry a magnet along with you and put it right up on top of that damn thing on your chest, rather than possibly having to cut you open and go through another expensive thing, because it's horribly expensive. I forget the price she told me that, I mean, no person could pay it. I mean, only the super rich could ever pay it. But I think it was about, $80,000, $100,000 or something like that. Maybe more than $100,000. So take care of your heart so your heart can take care of you. I'm going to run the audio on this. It's funny as hell. It's from a short video showing a St. John's man. I guess that's up in Canada or Nova Scotia, trying and generally failing to get out of a snowbound house while talking with his frustrated mother has turned into an international viral sensation. A two-day spring storm this week dumped 40 centimeters of snow to the greater St. John's area, bringing the city to a standstill. Residents have been shoveling out ever since. A video was taken Tuesday of Barry Horlick trying to escape from his mother's home in the city's Shea Heights neighborhood, where he became stuck in a snowbank. And the back-and-forth dialogue featured St. John's accents and vernacular expressions between Barry and his mother, Maureen. It set the video soaring. By Thursday, 100,000 people had viewed the one-minute video on YouTube. Well, I'll send you the video, but let me run the audio here, and maybe you'll get a little bit out of it.
Go that way.
Hey, this is ridiculous. What? What's the trouble?
Go home and get me some friends. What? Okay, don't stop. See, I knew it. Mama, stop. I knew it. Look. Take it off. You better cry. Look at the snow.
I'm stuck, Mother.
Just, now, love, I won't be able to get the door barred.
No choice.
Hold on to the post. Oh, jumping Jesus, the night before you get done.
I'm stuck. I'm stuck. I'm stuck.
You're going to have to go and get the shovel and have
to get here. I told him you need your shovel out.
Anyhow, that was funny as hell to watch, but it's almost as funny to listen to. I'll try to send that video along to you. You can find it on the YouTube. The YouTube. You know, this Greek Donnybrook is just a fiasco created by CIA and the Euro government. It's just going to fester and have uprisings and down going. And now the Greek Prime Minister Antonios Samaras has been struggling to contain a fresh political crisis after his chief of staff was filmed accusing him of instigating a judicial inquiry against the so-called neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party for political gain. The other side and all these people always like to call people neo-Nazi. Well, either they're National Socialists or they're not. And the press know exactly what they're doing, calling these people the Golden Dawn, for the most part, is nationalist, of course. Racially, a hell of a lot of the people in Golden Dawn wouldn't make it, as far as I'm concerned. That doesn't mean that I would be their enemy, necessarily, but people going on and on about this Golden Dawn, most of them say how wonderful it is and all that kind of stuff. Well, like I told a young Hitler worshiper this morning, you do not win in the long run just by having muscle in the street. The brown shirts never could have done it in Germany, even though to show that strength helped out. But you got to have people understanding statecraft, people that know how to be clever and get things done. You can always have the gun at the, politically speaking, the gun at their head, but it takes more than that. You can't just have gangs that are going to somehow put in a stable government, because, well, like the, there's an old saying, if you come to power by revolution, always kill the people who brought you to power because they're unstable and you can't trust them. That's maybe a little bit extreme, but in some cases that's true, because some people are very well equipped to fight in the streets and kill in the streets and do that kind of work, but they're not qualified to run things, to run a government. So I don't see anything good happening in Greece, at least for quite a while. The Greek Golden Dawn should shed as much of that so-called neo-Nazi crap as they can, because it doesn't do them any good. I mean, you know, look at all the Greeks that died in World War II and all that kind of stuff. Any of these Eastern European countries that try to mimic the National Socialists of the Second World War are being stupid, because it's an albatross around their neck. They should be white and socialist, or socialist and nationalist, and like that, and in opposition to predatory capitalism. But forget the uniforms and forget all that rough, tough stuff in the streets. It goes nowhere. If you're going to do anything, it would be a selected assassinations. Sorry, boys, if you're going to get to violence, selected assassination gains much more than gang riots in the streets. I like the way the press, the way they operate too. Whoever the press calls a neo-Nazi is a neo-Nazi. And then you say, well, what do you mean? What's a neo-Nazi? Well, I guess they're nationalists. Well, why does that make them neo-Nazi? Why do you use the term neo-Nazi? Well, of course, it's just the Jews and their buddies who are just as bad trying to defile something that could be good. But yet, a lot of the young guys will buy into it, say, oh, that's wonderful. The press call us neo-Nazis. Well, we're going to be the biggest, baddest guys in town. Well, you won't win that way. They've got a million ways to sidetrack you. I know if I lived in Greece and was a Greek nationalist, so along those lines, I wouldn't join Golden Dawn, because I'd figure that one out of every 10 of them is a government plant anyhow. And anything that goes wrong, they'll use Golden Dawn as a scapegoat. And also, the Greeks during the good times weren't putting money away, weren't saving any money, and they were having a good time. And when the bad times come, well, they're screwed. And so a lot of the general public, even the working class, have a lot to blame themselves for, even though the major problem is the big banks and all that kind of stuff. But people are, they're encouraged to get into materialism and spend everything they've got and live beyond their means, and then when things go to shit, they don't know what to do except blame somebody else. I see that over in New York State, the United Parcel Service, they had one area regional group there that one of the employees got in an argument over time and work time and some other crap. I don't know all the answers, but anyhow, they fired him, the UPS people, and now 200 other drivers are out on strike, and the company's threatened they're going to fire them all, but before they do, they're going to have them train guys to replace them. Sort of like taking a guy out and have him dig his own grave, and then after he digs the hole, shoot him and shove him into it. Well, I know that the UPS guys work their asses off. It's hard work to be a UPS driver, and I'm sure it's probably hard work to work within the warehouses too. In California, when UPS walked out and they had a strike, I went down and walked the picket line with the workers. And that was in San Marcos, California. And they were glad to see me, too.
When President Obama visited Sweden last year, he expressed his admiration for the Swedish model. And that should make Americans nervous, because a United Nations report says Sweden will be a third world nation in about 15 years, below Libya and Bulgaria. Sweden is a society that believes it is racing into the future, but critics warn that it's racing to the bottom. Welcome to Utopia, also known as Sweden. Sweden has been a laboratory of social experiments. Swedish leaders believe they're building the perfect society. And Sweden has been compared to a couple of nations which also tried to build perfect societies, North Korea and the Soviet Union. If you don't like how Utopia is being built here, you won't be shot like in North Korea, but your life could become very unpleasant very quickly.
Hallå, hallå. Jimmy Fredriksson from Expressen.
Jimmy Fredriksson?
Yeah.
This is a journalist from one of Sweden's leading tabloids confronting a Swede at his home. The man, a professor, made what he thought were anonymous negative comments on a website about immigrant problems in Sweden. But left-wing hackers helped the newspaper track him down and others like him, so that they could be exposed before the whole nation as racist. This man, a manager, was fired because of it. Sweden's leftist establishment and media believe a cornerstone of their perfect society is multiculturalism, large-scale immigration from some of the poorest, most backward nations on earth, and Swedes who disagree with that plan risk being labeled racist, fascist, even Nazi.
The rules of the game in Sweden is to avoid being hostile to immigration. It's the most important point to prove that you're friendly towards foreigners, you're friendly towards immigration.
Danish journalist Mikael Jolving is author of the book Absolute Sweden.
It's all about whether or not you can be said to be hostile to immigration. Once that is proven, you're out of the game.
It doesn't matter if Sweden's immigration model is failing miserably, if test scores in Swedish schools are plummeting, or if crime in some areas has skyrocketed. Immigrants burned the Stockholm suburb of Husby for over a week last year. Many Jews now live in fear of attacks by Muslim immigrants and are leaving. This former journalist for Swedish radio left last year and returned to her native Somalia. She told Swedish television that Mogadishu was safer than the immigrant suburbs in Stockholm. And forget about an American-style melting pot in which immigrants will someday learn to become Swedish. That's a racist idea, too. Jolving says Swedes are supposed to learn from immigrants and not the other way around.
Assimilation is completely out of the question.
Who says assimilation is completely out of the question?
Everybody in all mainstream political parties and media and platforms would laugh about the word assimilation is a Nazi word in Sweden.
We talked to several journalists who described a Stalinist-style atmosphere in Sweden, in which citizens are now afraid of saying anything that might get them labeled in the media as racist.
They point at you and say, you're a racist. Then you will have no career,
no job, you might lose your family.
Swedish journalist Ingrid Carlqvist and Danish journalist Lars Hedegaard run the online newspaper Dispatch International, which covers issues like immigration that the mainstream media in Sweden ignores. But Carlqvist says their plan for a traditional newspaper failed because Swedes were too scared to have the paper delivered to their homes.
Because what if the mailman saw that you had this newspaper? What if your neighbor saw it? Then they might think that you are a racist or that you hate Muslims.
So we thought we could sort of make an impact. We still think we can, but it's tough going.
Dispatch International now hangs on through donations. Sweden has become a nation where some viewpoints are simply too risky to even read.
What wise Swedish parents do nowadays is to advise their kids not to interfere in the public discussion, not to express so-called radical ideas about this or that.
Why? Why do they advise them?
Because they're afraid. Whether
that,
or not
that
this
their
is,
kids won't get work?
Yeah, it'll harm them.
That is a very bad situation because you live then in a country where you cannot solve any problems. You cannot even mention the problems.
Hedegaard, a Dane, was nearly killed last year in Copenhagen by an immigrant who came to his door and fired a gun at him. Carlqvist, a Swede, has decided to leave Sweden because of the persecution of those who dissent. Sweden is not going to become a third world nation tomorrow, but according to one report, one day it will.
We had a perfectly good country, a rich country, a nice country, and in a few years' time, that country will be gone.
Dale Hurt, CBN News, reporting from Sweden and Denmark.
And you think you're going to vote out of this, vote your way out, or follow some political party, no matter how radical that party might be? Bullshit. This is going to take a worldwide uprising of the white race, the white European race, and all its varieties. And it can't be Mickey Mouse. It can't be just marching in the street. It's got to be taken on physically. And if people don't like what I'm saying, kiss my ass. But the white race will never regain a position and flourish without the upheaval and revolutionary and civil war activity worldwide, something that will make the Al-Qaeda look very mild. But you got to have people that are not going to be afraid to be called racist. When they call me a racist, I say thank you and smile. I don't get angry. How can it be that people are so cowardly and chicken shit that calling them a racist makes them quit and go run down a hole? That's the Jew media and the of course all their Aryan lackeys. And whether they're Republican or Democrat, they're all your enemy now. I mean, if you find one that's not, well, I'd be glad to talk to them, introduce me to them. But we've got nothing other to do than fight, and I mean fight. It's just a matter of time. And if we don't, it's all over. Here's one of your great white heroes, Rand Paul. I always knew the family was not serious. Oh, maybe about the Federal Reserve, yeah. But Ron Paul was never really heavily racial, even though he flirted with it a little bit. But Rand Paul, he's talking about getting beyond deportation. When did the GOP ever get to deportation? This is an article written by a person from VDare. I used to have high hopes for Rand Paul, but the guy has really gone off the deep end. Politico reports an unhinged rant he delivered to a conservative event. Conservative. Even the guy's photograph makes him look unhinged. Kentuckians, you need to recall this guy, and pronto. There's nothing worse than a half-assed guy. get beyond deportation? Well, like it said, when did the GOP ever get to deportation? The Kentucky Republican and likely 2016 contender, which he'll never win, argued that before the GOP can make its case to the mestizo community, which voted overwhelmingly for Democrats in 2012, while millions of white people were pissed off and stayed home, the party needs to make clear it is open to a more welcome approach to immigration. In other words, to the invasion. The bottom line is the mestizo community, the Latino community, and I hate that word, is not going to hear us until we get beyond that issue. We don't give a shit whether they hear us. Rand Paul, we don't care. He said at a conservative event. His comments came immediately following a discussion on work visas in the context of broader address about reaching out to that community. Yeah, you reach out for cheap labor, and then you vote for NAFTA, that pauperized the Mexican farmers and drove Mexico into a horrible situation to where they're scrambling to come up here to make any money at all. Well, anyhow, quoting him, they're, quote, they're not going to care whether we go to the same church or have the same values or believe in the same kind of future of our country until we get beyond that. Showing up helps, but you got to show up and you got to say something. It has to be different from what we've been saying. Well, what have we been saying, Rand Paul, you jerk? We've been saying, get them out of the country. Enforce invasion laws. If another country came across that border with arms of a military, you'd have everybody in the military down there. They're worse. They come across pregnant and ready to drop a whole bunch of kids once they get in here. That's worse than a military invasion. But what if they don't believe in the same kind of future of our country? Well, of course they don't. Of course they don't. They want this to be a Latin country. They like it. They want it to be a Mexican mestizo country. Central American, a Spanish-speaking country. That's what they want. Their leaders have said that over and over again. That differs from the political path promoted by some of Paul's fellow conservatives, limp-wristed conservatives, who argue that if the GOP highlights other areas of common good with the mestizo community, beyond immigration, shared religious and entrepreneurial values, for example, that would be sufficient to make inroads with mestizos. In other words, more of that Republican bullshit and just an excuse to hire cheap labor. I say the white Republican Party is more of a threat to us than even the left-wing Democrats. At least we know exactly where they're at. These white Republicans are a bunch of lying sons of bitches and hypocrites of the worst order. Quote, I think that's what's happened is there is not the perception of empathy coming from the Republican Party. In other words, white people, that we care about where they're coming from and we care about what their problems are. He said, of minorities at a conservative gathering at the News Museum. Well, Rand Paul, we don't care what their problems are. We don't care what their aspirations are. They are invaders of our land, and they need to go, or there will be blood in the streets. At some point, there'll be lots of blood in the streets. Until we get to that point, he said, they're not going to listen to any of the next message. Are there any in the Latino mestizo community who go to church? Well, as far as I'm concerned, you can burn down the churches. They're major part of the problem. Believe in traditional values. sure Latin American traditional values are conservatives, question mark. Yes, maybe half, maybe 60%. There's enormous upside potential, but you got to get the door ajar. Now, this is Rand Paul that, what, 6 months ago was talking, rounding him up, I believe. This guy, one way to open that door to a mestizo invasion, he said, is to offer reassurances that Mrs. Garda's nephew is not going to be sent home to Mexico. You can't work with any of these politicians. Not one of them. They're all your enemy. They're all the enemy of the white race, no matter how white they are. And many of our worst enemies are the whitest Aryan, blonde-haired, blue-eyed people you want to see. They are absolutely our worst enemy. I can make better deals with the black community than I can with those guys. Over different issues, of course. What if Mrs. Garda's nephew is here illegally? What if he is a gang member, a thief, a rapist, or a murderer? While Paul opposed the comprehensive immigration reform package in the Senate last year, he has signaled that he supports other approaches to reform. It's all the same bullshit, letting them in. His comments, which came at an event held by the conservative groups, the American Principles Project. Yeah. And I wonder where their money's coming from. And the Media Research Center are part of the senator's broader effort to expand the GOP base. Yeah, they want to have it brown. The base brown is what they want. Mestizo Brown. It's a message he has taken across the country from Texas, where he warned that the deep red Lone Star State could turn blue if the party doesn't pursue a more inclusive approach. To Detroit, where he reached out to Negro Americans. To Berkeley, California, where he pitched young people on his libertarian-leaning brand of conservatism. There's your libertarians for you. You can't trust them as far as you can throw. I used to debate them all the time. They wanted the border wide open way back in the 70s. I debated one of their officials in San Diego, and he said he didn't want any rules at the border. He wanted to let it wide open. That was their position way back then. The other thing to acknowledge is it's not always the individual's fault. He said of undocumented invaders, quote, sometimes it's a child who has no control over this. But sometimes it also is someone who came here and tried to use our system. Well, that's the word, use the system. That's all they want, is to use the system. Get what they can get and go back home if they can. A lot of them do. Come in, grab the money, and leave. But who cares either way? I don't care. I don't want any of these explanations. I don't give a shit about their explanations. We as conservatives talk a lot about big government and how big government never seems to work. We're always talking about Obamacare now, how big government is a disaster. Well, guess what? Big government's not very good with the visa system either. Well, there's some things you need big government for, and that is to seal your borders and protect it from invasion, not only of mestizos, but all these hundreds of thousands and millions of Islamics that are coming in. I mean, the cities are filling up with them. He added, part of the problem is big government. So as, well, then you want to use big government to let them all in, right? So as conservatives, and I hate that word, that's become a word I despise. At one time I thought it was a great word, but no longer. When we are blasting big government not working, we need to understand that the visa system's a part of big government. Well, it's not being used. None of the laws are being used. So they deport a few thousand each year. So what is Rand suggesting? Not requiring visas? Noting that the Republicans have messages that should resonate with the mestizo invaders on subjects like education and economy, he said, quote, "We got to get beyond deportation to get to the rest of the issues." Well, maybe Rand Paul, you can build yourself a big mansion up on top of one of those Kentucky hills down there and keep them out. Put a big wall around your property like most politicians do. But most working class people can't. And guess where all these wetbacks go? Right into the working class neighborhoods of the country. And that's where the blood will begin to flow at some point. Get beyond deportation, he says. Currently less than 1% of invaders in the U.S. interior are deported. What is there to get beyond? His remarks came during the public launch of a new media research center watchdog initiative, probably financed by the Koch brothers, designed to ensure that Spanish language media is unbiased. Paul was asked several times in a subsequent question and answer session about liberal bias. Well, I don't see you being much different than the liberals myself. While he charged that he feels that, more broadly speaking, he is treated less fairly in print than on television, he was quick to pivot back to his message that conservatives need to make an effort to appear in Spanish language outlets and beyond. Forget all those white voters that are staying away from the polls because of your ridiculous positions. Rand Paul, GOP must get beyond deportation. By Kathy Gluck from Politico, April 1st, 2014. What do I keep telling you about Manchurian candidates? There's nothing fits a Manchurian candidate more than the Republican Party. And just like the original movie showed, it made the more liberal Democrat look like an unpatriotic son of a bitch, and turned out that it was the Republican conservative family that furnished up the Manchurian candidate. This is the way it works. But for now, a whole hell of a lot can't be done. I think we should be prepared for whatever happens. And if it starts blowing up in one area of the country, it's time to blow it up in another area of the country, or whatever means possible. The fuse is lit, but it's a long fuse. And there are hiring thousands and thousands of FBI agents and Homeland Security and the Northern Command, military and everything, to kick our ass when we finally decide to not take any more and strike out and cut their throats. But it's going to have to be, because this so-called country cannot go on the way it is. And all you have to do is look at England. British country, see what's there. Look at what's going on in downtown London. Look what's going on in this Sweden. Look what's going on in all those countries that are being rapidly, I mean at warp space, turned into third world countries. And still we wait. Still we wait. One thing you can't do is when someone strikes out to change it or do whatever they have to do, do not criticize them, don't run them down, and support them. And even if they go to prison, support them in prison, especially in prison. You know, black dysfunction is spreading through this country like a virus, a creepy, crawly virus of uneducated people that don't desire education, that even if they are given education, remain pretty much the way they started, that they can't speak reasonable English or about anything, and if you watch them on TV court and all that, you'll know. The Annie E. Casey Foundation has a decent website of social statistics by state. Above is their map of the percentage of black children living in two-parent families, with stronger colors being better. Not surprisingly, the best percentages are found in states that blacks get to mostly through the military. Hawaii and North Dakota are tied for the best at 65%. I guess now that Craig Cobb's out of the way. Wisconsin and Illinois are the worst at 30%. It's kind of the Illinois Central Railroad. I'm the train they call the City of New Orleans. The theory of geographic distribution of black dysfunction. So you can go up there probably and find that website under the Annie E. Casey, C-A-S-E-Y Foundation. And read and weep. But most of you don't have to weep because you can see it all around you, especially if you live in a larger metropolitan city or even a... You're almost swallowed up in a black plague. Speaking of the train that called the City of New Orleans, let's hear a good rendition of it while we're here. Let's see.
Riding on the City of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. There's 15 cars and 15 restless riders, the 3 conductors and 25 sacks of mail. They're out on a southbound odyssey, and the train pulls out of Kankakee, rolls past the houses, farms, and fields, and passing towns that have no name, and freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of rusted automobiles. Singing good morning, America, how are you? Don't you know me, I'm your native son. I'm just a train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when day is done. I was dealing cards with the old man in the club car, and if it's penny a point, there ain't nobody keeping score. Won't you pass that paper bag that holds the tequila? You can feel the wheels grumbling beneath the floor. The sons of Pullman porters and the sons of engineers all ride their daddy's magic carpet, and it's made of steam. Mothers with their babes asleep go rocking to the gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rails is all they dream. Singing good morning, America, how are you? And don't you know me, I'm your native son. I'm just the train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when day is done. It's nighttime on the City of New Orleans, and we're changing cars in Memphis, Tennessee. All a halfway home, we'll be there by morning, through the Mississippi darkness, rolling to the sea. All the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream, and the old steel rail, it ain't heard the news. The conductor sings that song again, its passengers will please refrain. This train's got the disappearing railroad blues. Good night, America, how are you? And don't you know me, I'm your native son. I'm just the train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when day is done. Good night, America, how are you? And don't you know me, I'm your native son. I'm just the train they call the city of New Orleans. Gone a long, long time when day is done.
Well, I like that song and I sing it quite a bit. When I do karaoke, I might even sing it tonight. Probably going out to dinner tonight and do a little singing of karaoke. That's sort of my entertainment. I like to do it. Been doing it for quite a while, even though my voice isn't going to be very good tonight, I'll tell you that. When a fellow sings that Native Son stuff, as far as I'm concerned, talking about us, white people, not concerning ourselves with the Mongols that ideally would have been pushed out. Many of them were, but the Christians wanted to save their souls, so they herded them onto these so-called reservations and set them up so they could have big gambling casinos, right? There's nowhere that we can find anything that was bad for the white race in this country in its history that you can't find largely Christianity and churches behind it. Now, you can scream about Jews all you want to, and Jews were involved, but not nearly as much as a lot of right-wingers would like to make out. I think the white race gets in plenty of trouble on its own by not policing itself, not purging itself of these alien beliefs and his mysticism and really idol worship. And what's funny is worshiping something that's not there. That was a clever trick the Jews did come up with. Well, we've been worshiping all this other stuff here, Ben, including the moon and all that, but we got a better idea. Let's set up something where we're worshiping something we can't even see. And then we don't have to explain it or make excuses for it. It's just there, and it's watching you all the time to make sure you ain't committing no sin. What a control mechanism that is. It's beautiful. I mean, really, for a control mechanism, it's perfect. But for the advancement and evolution of the race, it's shit. You know, I've been receiving some letters from a guy by the name of Greg Withrow. Now, you newer people will not know much about him, but I'm telling you, he's one of these unbelievable guys that were involved with us way back in the 80s, maybe even the late 70s, that came aboard and was running the White Student Union in at, what is it, Red River College up there in Sacramento. Anyhow, the main college. And he's doing a damn good job. But I'm telling you, it's hard to rehabilitate somebody who's been into drugs because he'd spent a lot of time on the street. And even though his father was a hardcore racist National Socialist, he tried to follow that route, but he got into drugs and so forth. And he worked with us for quite a while with this White Student Union. And then all of a sudden, he had the excuse that he'd fallen in love and he wanted out with some waitress he fell in love with at some hamburger stand. And so we said, well, that's no problem as long as you don't attack us. Just go your way and no problem. That's been my policy for years and decades. Well, what happened? He started taking interviews with the press, attacking us. And then he dreamed up this story that he told the press that Tom Metzger and John and the boys had waylaid him on the streets of Sacramento, that we tied him to a cross laying on the street, cut incisions in his chest with a knife, and left him there. And of course, the sheriff's department in Sacramento, California has always been corrupt. And Greg Withrow had worked as a shill in a gambling parlor that I think the sheriff had a lot of investment in it. And at one point, he got out of line with his employers, and they came to the door and broke his teeth out and screwed his neck up, evidently for stealing out of the pot. And then he tried to blame that on us too. Well, the sheriff's department in Sacramento and FBI or whoever, they knew it was a bald-faced lie, but they wouldn't come out and say that, because anything you say about Tom Metzger or John Metzger or anybody else that works with me, they let go, no matter how big a lie it was. Well, Greg Withrow started appearing on television shows all over the United States, telling this horrible story of what Tom Metzger did to him. And everybody's ooh and ah, and the Jews hired him, and they were going to make a movie about him and everything. And it just kept going on and on like that, with people who knew better going along with it. I even got on one of the shows and debated him. But it doesn't do any good with the public out there. They're so stupid, especially the white sheep out there that believe anything they say about somebody who believes in their race. Well, then I heard they were going to have a state meeting to discuss the future of hate crimes in California. And guess what? Greg Withrow was right there, one of the main people to appear to testify before this state commission. And of course, this was the governor was involved, the attorney general was involved, and he told all his story, and he went on and on and on, totally lying through his teeth. And that helped kick off the hate crimes law in California and the nation, because he was one of the most wildest speakers they had and seemed to carry tremendous weight, that he'd been crucified and hung on a cross and cut up and left to die or whatever in the streets of Sacramento, and it was all a lie. That was the meeting that they came out of it and decided to have the hate laws. Well, guess what? This Greg Withrow has sent me letters over the years since then that he's back being a racist, and he's against the system, and he's this and he's that, and he's challenging them and here and there and everywhere. And I just throw them in the trash. Well, I got one today, I guess. He's in jail. Now, during that time that he was saying all these nasty things and working for the state almost as an unpaid rat, he was bedding down with a swarthy mestizo woman who most mestizos they'd kick her out of bed. She didn't speak English or anything. She was a total primitive. Well, anyhow, so he sends me a letter that he's in jail. He had told me all about why he's in jail, but I didn't even read it. I just threw it in the trash. Because he went around for years putting signs up on telephone poles, the revolutionary this, and he was going to take over, he's going to kill everybody and all this. And, of course, he ideologically terrorized the whole area where he used to live in. But I'm just telling you what some people who swear they're good white racists, or even just decent white people, what some of them will turn and do and fabricate stories and everything out of that to hurt people. And then have the temerity to contact me. I guess he wants me to help him. The latest letter I did happen to read, he said the FBI came out to search his property. Because he's always threatening people, threatening all kinds of people in the government, you know. He never does it, but he threatens them. So they're searching his property, and he's crying because they shot two of his dogs. Well, if I know this guy, he had two German shepherds probably that were trained to tear people to pieces, and evidently he didn't call them back, and FBI and their local police just shot him. But anyhow, Greg Withrow, if you'll go on the internet, WITHROW, Greg Withrow, you can research the whole sordid story of how someone who starts out to be a very loyal person to the struggle ends up being its most bitter enemy. That's what happened to Rockwell when he was assassinated. It's happened to several of our white activist leaders. Remember, like Tom Martinez, the swarthy part Puerto Rican or something, that I never have been able to figure out why Bob Matthews would ever recruit the son of a bitch. And I didn't even realize how non-white he was until after the fact, because he'd been involved with David Duke's Klan, and he'd been involved in a lot of activity. He used to send me Christmas cards and things like that. I'd never seen his picture, but once you see his picture, you know, you say, well, why in the hell would anybody recruit him? Well, he turned out to be the one that really pounded the nails in Bob Matthews' coffin. So you got to be careful. You got to be extremely careful. Watch anyone that you have associations with very, very carefully, no matter how long you've known them. Any little thing that rings the dinger, man, don't take anything for granted. Anybody that you work with very closely, you got to know where they work, how long they've worked there, where they've ever been arrested. You got to know everything about them, or don't have anything to do with them other than just say, hi, how you doing, Shorty or Jack? I know lots of people like that that I call associates, because it's never more than small talk. Never. Because you can't trust almost anybody. And I hope you understand that. Matt Hill understands it, but it's way too late. Dennis Mahan understands it, but it's way too late. George Loeb down in Florida, he understands it, but it's way too late. Once they get you, they got you. So lone wolf, run as a lone wolf. Everybody else is just an associate passing in the night. That's it for today, 14:05. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Saturn's Day. 14:05. Don't ever forget it. Don't ever answer their questions. Just to keep myself on the toes, a lot of times I'll watch these live documentary crime situations where they're hauling all these niggers into the police station and listen to them talk and turn on each other and everything. You can learn a lot by listening to the stupidity of these people. People who would not be charged at all. They have no case at all against them. And they'll talk themselves right into the prison or the gas chamber. It's something else. Bye-bye.
He's in the jailhouse now.
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 I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and rolling those dice. He's in the jailhouse now. Now I had a friend named Ramblin' Bob who used to steal, gamble, and rob. He thought he was the smartest guy in town. But I found out last Monday, Bob got locked up Sunday. They got him in that jailhouse way downtown. He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now. Greatest man around. She started in to spend my money, started in to call me honey. We took in every honky tonk in town. We're in the jailhouse now.
We're in the jailhouse now.
We're in the